Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I hope you'll excuse me. I'm still coughing. I am much, much better, but I still cough. But we're going to try to do the show this morning. I hate missing it, and I am a lot better. I hope everyone had a wonderful weekend. We did here. We celebrated my grandson, Austin Kane. It was his 22nd birthday. So we had a big birthday party for him Saturday. Lots of fun, lots of people and friends and family. And a lot of time spent around the swimming pool. And the swimming pool is what I really want to talk about. The swimming pool and all the other bodies of water that are here in South Florida. I dare say there's not much ground space here in Florida that can stretch for very far without water being there. And knowing how to swim, at least to tread water, is imperative. Now, we were going to do this show Friday because I had gotten a post on Facebook from a woman who told her story about her little boy who sunk to the bottom with a party full of adults, even in the water next to him. And everybody thought he was just underwater playing. So when they pulled him out, he wasn't breathing. And this woman's friend worked on this little boy until he coughed up water and started breathing again. That ending of that particular episode can be good and bad. And that's one of the other things I'd like to talk about today. I'm going to bring Shelly in. She just came up on my dashboard. Good morning, honey. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Hope you're doing good.
I'm better, finally. Still coughing like a 70-year-old smoker, and that's a little discerning since I never did any of that.
But I
just have to think about coughing, and I have to, so. I've talked about this on our health show before. When I was in my 30s, I was diagnosed with emphysema from secondhand smoke. So if I do get a cold that concentrates on your lungs or a flu that concentrates on your lungs, I always have trouble with coughing. So I should be used to it by now. But I wanted to do the show we were going to do on Friday when we couldn't get into Blog Talk because it is that time of year, and every time, it comes up on Facebook all the time. And ironically, Friday, when I wanted to talk about this on the Today Show, there was a video that a man had set up by his pool. And it showed they had a fence, one of those kid fences around their pool, out on their closed-in patio to keep their little two-year-old out of the pool. And you see the video playing, and nobody's at the pool, and here comes this little guy. He walked right around the far corner and squeezed through the fence because his ball went in the pool.
Yeah,
and
wow.
Luckily, the parents are in the house and see the camera. And the little boy goes in the pool after the ball, and one of the other adults, I don't know relationship-wise, I don't know if it was the dad or what it was, you see him on this video that the patio camera is taking, dive over that fence, clear the concrete that's between the fence and the actual pool, and save the little boy. And I thought, wow, this is like another reason why I should be doing this show. I get those kind of hints when there's something I want to talk about I see all those kind of things to remind me that we need to talk about the swimming safety. So this little boy was all right. But even when other family members watched this video, they said, how did he get around the fence? I said, little kids can get in anywhere. I mean, if you think you have your house kid safe, think again.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do not. I mean, they show those videos all the time where people put the nanny cam in the baby's bedroom and they see the little kids figuring out how to walk their crib across and get up on a dresser and climb their, pull drawers out and get all the way down off the, I mean, it's uncanny. I mean, they're survivalists at 1.5 years old. So, but the heartache is that so many times, and the story I'm going to read is about a pool that's not empty. And everybody's there, the parents, probably the grandparents, aunts and uncles, friends of the family. Everybody is there. And this little boy is underwater, and until his mom sees him, nobody realizes that he's drowning. And we've been there. We've done that. We've all been in the pool, and when you're in a pool with a whole bunch of little kids, it's chaos, total chaos.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know that. But I mean, they're jumping in and they're screaming and they're hollering, and the ones that can swim are, watch me, watch me, watch me. You know, I mean, it's very chaotic. So I'm going to quick read this story, and this has a happy ending, so I'm okay with reading the whole thing. But sometimes it doesn't have such a happy ending. My son drowned 3 days ago. His limp, gray, lifeless body was pulled from the pool, and it was every mother's worst nightmare. He was dead. I was screaming, and after a minute realized the screaming was coming from me. I watched in slow motion as people rushed to him as he was laid on the concrete and CPR was started. A million thoughts were flying through my head as I stumbled around. Not knowing what I was doing, screaming, I saw my dead baby on the ground. I thought about his twin brother and how could his life go on without his twin? I saw my 10-year-old son hysterically sobbing in his bright blue swim trunks, his beautiful tan skin glistening with pool water still, his life ruined because he had just watched his brother die. Drowned in the same pool where he was playing, I saw my sassy little 3-year-old daughter in her pink unicorn and rainbow suit just watching me, confused. And how was I going to tell my husband that I had let our perfect 5-year-old son drown? It was exactly like I've read other people say in emergency situations. I thought this must be a dream, one of those dreams that you wake up to sweating and short of breath because it was so real. Wake up, but no, I was already awake. Then the screaming was worse. This is happening. My funny, silly, sweet, handsome, artistic, thoughtful little blondie was dead. I finally was able to force myself to stop screaming. I ran over to where CPR continued on my precious baby. I have no idea how long it was, 10 seconds, 3 minutes, I don't know. But I ran to him and watched and cried and talked to him as my friend tirelessly and relentlessly continued CPR. He looked awful and was perfectly still at the same time. I watched as water and vomit poured out of his mouth, eyes swollen and rubbery looking. Then a miracle happened. I don't remember what it was first, but he showed some sign of life because several people at the same time claimed there he is. I keep getting pop-ups on my computer, so I have to go back to everything. I love this. Anyway, a million thoughts racing through my mind. I was sure even if he was saved, it was too late. I was sure machines were going to be doing his living for him. I was sure This had taken too long. Everything that happened next seemed like an eternity. The ambulance took forever to get there. They tried to get an IV on the scene but couldn't. The ride to the hospital was painfully long, but my baby started coming around. He jerked his arm back with the IV needle stick. He cried. He was coughing. Somehow, my baby was still with me. We have now been at ICU Peyton Manning for the last 3 days. He is sitting beside me in a bed right now playing with a stuffed puppy a friend brought him and watching Captain Underpants for the 70th time. He's off all oxygen. He will very likely come home with me today. Home with me 3 days after drowning. Home to live happily with his family instead of us burying him today. The reason I'm sharing, this happened in a pool full of people. A pool full of adults. I've read so many stories about kids slipping away from their parents and getting into a pool to be found drowned shortly later. I've never considered the possibility that my child could drown right in front of people who were watching him bob up and down from the bottom of the pool to just below the surface. They didn't think he was struggling because he looked like he was playing. When I found him myself, 2 feet from adults who were in the pool, my first thought that it wasn't him, that it was somebody else's kid who was seeing how long they could hold their breath. I can 100% understand why the adults who were right there didn't recognize that he was drowning. Because when I saw him, I too thought he was just a kid who was playing. What tipped me off was the kid I saw was wearing a shirt. Adam had gotten in the pool with his shirt. I don't know. He doesn't know how to hold his breath. Get him out. That's Adam. This was 100% preventable. The fault was mine. He's a big 5-year-old, has a very needy twin who makes it easy for me to forget that Adam is 5'2 and has needs that other 5-year-olds have. He's not self-sufficient, even though sometimes I feel like he is because he's so capable. I didn't tell him to get in the pool without his puddle jumper on. But I was aware that he had. I simply told him to stay in the shallow end while I got his sister's swimsuit on, and then I'd be over. I thought it was fine for 5 minutes, as he could touch just fine in the shallow end. He wasn't alone because there were multiple adults in the pool, and I'd be right next to the pool getting her suit on. Wrong. Wrong. I have never, ever been so wrong. He remembers what happened. He said he slipped off the edge. Based on where he was in the shallow end and where we found him, he means the ledge from the shallow end to the deep end. He said he kept going to the bottom, then to the top, and tried to yell, "Mommy." It kills me to hear that. It kills me to know that his last thoughts were that Mommy didn't come for him. But God decided to give me another chance to do better. He gave me my baby back. Now he knows I did come for him. Who knows what we'll face from here? Physically, it's beyond comprehension that he is suffering no consequences. He is asking to go back to my friends to swim and says, "This time I'll wait for Mommy," before getting in the pool. But he yells for me every single time I'm out of his sight. He clearly has some anxiety that he didn't have before. I pray that some counseling and lots of reassurance will fix that. I'm sharing this because I want to prevent this from happening to anyone else. Before going to any pool, first make sure your kids know not to get in until an adult who is responsible for them is ready to watch them. That sounds like common sense, but I was thinking because so many adults were present, he was fine. But those adults didn't know his swimming abilities, so they didn't question when he was under the water. Second, know the signs of struggle. Adam didn't look like he was struggling. He wasn't splashing, thrashing, or screaming. He simply went underwater and couldn't get his head above the water. Third, no CPR. I do know CPR. Could have performed it that moment. I like to believe I could. But if I hadn't seen someone else taking charge, I like to think if I'd have been alone, my survival skills would have kicked in. Luckily, I don't know because my amazing friend was busy saving him. But I do know that if I didn't know CPR, my helping him, if we'd been alone, wouldn't even have been a possibility. I said I wasn't going to share what happened. I felt so responsible. I am responsible because I let him get in without any sort of device on. He was there before I personally was ready to watch him, but I decided to share because I see parents at pools doing these same things every single day. And I'm sharing to hopefully spread drowning awareness. I'm also sharing to thank my friend for saving him, thank her over and over and over. I am eternally grateful to her and will never, ever be able to repay her. Ironically, I was there for her as her nurse when her son took his first breath after he was born. And now she was there for me as my son took his first breath after he died. Please take water safety seriously. I never thought this would be me. It was me. But thanks to God and my dear friend Kristen, my son is still safely here. Learn from my mistakes so it's not you. Adam Jeffrey Leeson, born 3/15/14. Adam Jeffrey Leeson, saved 7/20/19. I have no pictures of what he looked like when he drowned. Unfortunately, I only have an image forever tattooed in my brain. I've shared a few images of him in the hospital, and the most important one, the one with his guardian angel, Kristen Moon. Please, please, please share this. I'm a nervous wreck to share what happens to my stomach to hit share, actually, but I feel this happened to save others. In my heart of hearts, I know that other parents need to read this. Quite a letter, huh?
Yeah, very well written, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, very honest.
Honest. Well, a couple of things impressed me, the fact that she's taking responsibility, because a lot of people in catastrophic situations feel so guilty that they try to mitigate their involvement or their wrongdoing or their neglect or whatever, you know. And a lot of times it is just a matter of distraction or something out. You know, a lot of tragedies happen from just someone being distracted. They're not a bad person. They might not even be a negligent person, but that one moment, that one day, they got distracted or weren't paying attention, you know, and instead of taking responsibility for it after the fact, they try to blame all other kinds of and sometimes even try to blame other people because they can't handle their own guilt. The fact that she's being so forthcoming is refreshing because, number one, when you accept responsibility for something that's a tragedy or that could have been a tragedy, you're basically instructing your brain to be more hyper alert in the future. And this is all part of psychology. When you start doing the blame game to release yourself of any responsibility or guilt, what happens is your brain is like, I don't need to modify my behavior because you're telling your brain that you did everything okay and that this tragedy happened because somebody else messed up. And that's why a lot of times when people have those type of things happen to them and they don't take responsibility, tragedies will continue to be around them, or bad things or accidents or, you know, bad situations. So it's very, very, it's very comforting to hear that she's taking responsibility, because now you know her kids are going to be safe. She's going to be more hyper aware. She's going to be more careful, you know, because she took responsibility. And that's one of the main reasons why it is a good thing to take responsibility. You don't want to overlay yourself with guilt. That's not the whole point, because guilt can be a very destructive emotion. So, you know, so let the guilt go. But when you take responsibility, that's sort of empowering, because then it puts you in a position of knowing that you're not going to allow that to happen again. So, but a lot of people try to avoid that initial guilt sensation and push off on other people. So that's something that really impressed me about her, her message. About taking the pool safety safely, but also the fact that she took responsibility for her own inaction at the time. And so I was very impressed with those two things.
Me too. And the other thing that I feel very strongly about, because I've seen this too. I mean, gosh, Kaylee Jo, my niece, she's 18 now. When she was two, She was just running around the pool. She just fell in. She didn't jump in. She just fell in. And there were grown-ups there and in the pool, and they felt the splash come behind their back and didn't do anything. If the rest of us hadn't been sitting at a table right close by and looking in that direction, the same thing would have happened to Kaylee Jo. As it happened, like three of us jumped up from the same table and were in the pool in a heartbeat and had her out of the water.
Right, right.
Sorry.
Right.
Definitely a different story.
Right. One of the things she said, though, is that a lot of times when you see, and it's not just children, by the way, although children are obviously more at risk, there are adults that
mm-hmm.
can't swim either. And a lot of times
people see
a child or an adult. One of the key things, if you see someone bobbing up and down, take a moment and pay attention to their facial expression. If they're not laughing and interacting each time they come up, they're in distress, because that's not normal behavior to bob up and down. Usually what's happening is they're losing grip, sinking, and they're starting to expel all the air in their lungs. And as they expel the air in their lungs, they start sinking, because when your lungs are full of air, it makes you more buoyant. As the lung is being expressed and you're either swallowing water or something is actually forcing you back down in the water. I think I was 17 or 18, and this is when I lived in New York, and we had gone to the beach, and we were on this little inlet. It was like this little private beach my friends had found. And what they were doing is, in the inlet, you could swim from one shore to the next. You could actually see it. And that's what everybody was doing. They were swimming across the inlet. It only took maybe 3 minutes. And you'd swim across, get to the other side. So we were on both sides of this little inlet, and everybody kept swimming back and forth. So I did it a couple of times. But one of the times, I guess I had gone out too far to the right, and nobody realized there was a whirlpool there. Well, I got caught in the whirlpool. And I couldn't go forward and I couldn't go back because, a whirlpool is where the water is going in a circle. And it kept pulling me mm-hmm. down, and I would bob up, but everybody was doing that. Well, thank God, one of the guys on the other shore turned around and looked and saw me going up and down the same place three times and realized what was happening. He was the only one who did. Now, there was like 30 of us there. Thank God this one guy,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember if he was a lifeguard or something, but he had seen this happen before and recognized it. He was a young guy, too. He was like 18 or 19. He dove in the water, came out, and grabbed me. He actually went under the water, grabbed me, and pulled me out of the whirlpool, and then swam me back to shore. But that was a near-drowning experience for me. I had actually gone down. If he had not seen me, I would have drowned because I was going down for my last time. I had swallowed a whole bunch of water, and I was not, at that point, I was sinking. So, thank God, some angel got him to look at me. But like you said, all these people that were there with the little kids, there was a storm full of people watching me, and nobody realized I was in distress because I couldn't scream out because I'd already swallowed some water.
Well, yeah. I mean, my mother and I, when I was only like about 14, we're at a local body of water, like a pond or something, and we would, I've been swimming since I was like, I don't know, four, really swimming. And I said to mom, I think something's the matter with that man. And she looked and she says, you're right, let's go get him. And he was like probably 30 feet offshore, maybe further than that. And mom and I went out, and he dove in the water. We watched him, and he was very muscular, and he was swimming real hard, and got out there and got a cramp. And and he couldn't even straighten out his legs. And you could see, if you see somebody who's very sinewy, muscular, you can see when they get a cramp because it makes a knot right in their muscle, And that's what he was doing. Mom and I put our – Mom said, just put your arm under his armpit, and we just started swimming, and we brought him back in. And I can't tell you how many times I've taken little kids out of the water, even when I was a little kid. But the point is, pools today and water safety is not new to anybody. I mean, everywhere you go in a Walmart, in a Target, There's all kinds of apparatuses to keep your child safe. And my advice is that when you hit a body of water, whether it's the beach, a lake, a swimming pool, even one of those little kiddie pools that you blow up, because all they need to do is smack their head and get underwater and suck up that water.
Yep.
You know, they can't come back up after they do that.
Right.
So something has to be on them, and somebody has to be watching them every minute.
Right. And a lot of, now I'm going to tell you something that my niece Dawn has taken advantage of. She lives down in Loxahatchee, which is near West Palm Beach. So the Palm Beach County has what's called the Drowning Prevention Coalition, and they actually offer free swimming lessons for children. It's for certain age groups, and they have to be deemed that they can't swim. So it's not just to get like free entrance to a pool area. And she has already had she's had both her younger kids go through this program. Cody has already been released because he's a strong enough swimmer, and Bae's still in classes because she gets distracted very easily, so they're not confident that she's like savvy enough in the pool yet, so they're keeping him for another year. But Cody's already been like certified. He knows what to do. He knows how to handle himself. But they teach the kids how to handle in an emergency. They teach them how to float, how to tread water if something were to happen and they were in a body of water that was too deep for them, and how to get back to a safe, you know. So it's all about drowning prevention, and that's the so they're teaching them good swimming techniques, but they're also teaching them drowning prevention, and it's free of charge, you know. So it's free of charge for household incomes that are below a certain level. So like it wouldn't be free of charge to somebody that, you know, that's making a lot of money. But if you're at a lower income household, that's what this is for, is to help people that can't go and pay for swimming lessons. So, I'm sure because Palm Beach County is doing it, probably all the counties have programs like this, and you can probably Google it in your area or your state. You know, we have listeners from all over. And I highly recommend that if you are in a position where paying for swim lessons for your children would be a struggle, is to look for these programs. And if it wouldn't be a struggle, then it probably would be a good idea to bring them to a pool that has swimming lessons to enable your child to develop those skills, to develop those instincts, so that they know how to help themselves, whether they're 6 years old and swimming in a public pool, or they're a teenager out on a boat with friends and they accidentally fall overboard. You know, this is wherever you live, and it's not just Florida. There's waters, there's lakes, there's water sports everywhere you go. People go on vacation. There's water everywhere, and there's pools everywhere. You can't go to a resort today without there being a public pool there for people to use. And you do hear many times, even at some of these beautiful, fun, magical parks that people go to, and you hear of children drowning in them because the people are on vacation and they're not paying attention to their own children. You know, they're on vacation, yeah, go play in the pool, and then the next thing you know, everybody's screaming because there's a little kid that succumbed at the bottom of the pool. And unfortunately, and that's probably another good thing to talk about, is people that go on vacation or they're staying at resort or hotels, so they're in a very relaxed state of mind. You still have to employ the same safety standards as you would in your own home. You can't just, because you're on vacation, now all of a sudden stop watching your kid, you know, because a lot of times you hear of tragedies in some of these magical resort parks that people go to, or even just resorts, period, that have pools, and the people will take their minds off their own children. But so I strongly recommend either the county or the state provided free classes, or if you can enroll your kid in classes and pay for them, take advantage of that, because there's nothing better than having your kid be a strong swimmer.
Well, I'm a big advocate of that. I mean, my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren can all swim. Even Bubby, the little guy that I talk about quite a bit, he's five now. he's swimming from one end of the pool to the other, and he has some major disabilities, and he was scared, and he went from life jacket to water wings to all of the above. And the minute he'd get to my house, before I'd be in the kitchen and everybody'd be headed for the pool, and I'd scream for his mother, and I'd say, "You grab that kid and get him into the life jacket before he's out allowed to be out by the pool." And
right.
you know,
right.
she'd be like, and they'd be saying, "Bubby, you can't go in the pool." And I said, "Don't do that. Get a life jacket on him. I know that child. He will be by the pool, and you won't be watching." So
right.
It's serious, and it can be very, very sad, which brings me to the second half of my story. Many years ago, I lived in a neighborhood in Pompano, and I worked a lot, and something happened to me, and I ended up having back surgery. So I didn't work for a long time after my surgery, but part of my getting better was walking. So it kind of, I will always be grateful because I met a whole bunch of my neighbors. I would walk for blocks at a time. In the beginning with a walker and then just walking by myself, it was good for me. It helped me because I wasn't working, but it also made my back stronger after my back surgery. So every time I walked down this one street, not every time, but often when I walked down this one street, I'd see this family come out that had quite a few children. And one of them was in a gurney type of thing that was half
yeah.
set up. So they were sitting up, but I could tell that the child in it, wasn't awake. And so one day I'm walking by and the family's outside and the little girl that I'd seen before isn't out there. And they said, "What are you doing? You walk this way all the time." And I said, "Well, I had back surgery, so I'm trying to, I'm trying to get me better, you know." So the man says to me, "You want to drink?" It was real hot. And he says, "You want a glass of water?" I said, "Oh my gosh, that would be so nice." You know, that was before everybody carried a bottle of water around with them all the time. And so I go in the house, and on the left side, which would have normally been a Florida room, was a room that was set up like a hospital. And in this big hospital bed was this little girl who was obviously not aware. Her eyes were open. She didn't speak. She wasn't intubated either, by the way, but she was very, I don't even know the right word, so I describe it. I don't think she could do anything but breathe on her own, and they had things that she did with her eyes and stuff like that to help them know what she needed.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Of course, it was like somebody stabbed me in my heart that day seeing that. And, of course, I had to stay composed because this was a family who was making do with a horrific situation. And finally, the mom looks at me and she said, "She drowned." I said, "What?" She said, "She drowned."
Oh, wow.
And I said, "Oh, my God." I said, I don't even know what to say. Sorry seems really insufficient and almost, rude. And she smiled at me and she says, "I know." She says, a lot of people have the same reaction. A lot of people are full of questions and want us to answer everything, and that's embarrassing. And I said, "Well, I'm not going to go there." So then the father comes out and hands me a card. And on it is P.O.N.D. And I said, "Pond?" He said, "Yeah, parents of nearly drowned." And I said, "Wow." They had a whole organization, which after I thought about this, I tried to find. It must be defunct because I couldn't find it anywhere again. But they started an organization for like a support group for the parents of kids that were in the same situation as this little girl. But I never forgot it, Shelley.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
That meant in something that took maybe 3 to 5 minutes, their whole life was changed. Their whole life was changed.
Yep.
And for me, it was kind of like something that took 2 seconds changed the lives. I think they had 3 other kids, so 4 kids altogether, and the mom and the dad. And I'm, you know, grandmas and grandpas and aunts and uncles. I don't know how many of them there were, but everybody's life was changed because of one day. And that's what she did. She fell in the side of the pool and nobody was paying attention. And they resuscitated her, but her brain and her, you know, most of her faculties never came back. So that's a life of caring for. I've often wondered how many years she survived, if that's what you want to call that. And but it made me think that everybody should know stories like that. So when this story got shared on Facebook, first 3 times I read it, I had to cry. So I had to read it to myself, like, I don't know how many times before. You know me, I can't read Martin Luther King's speech without getting tongue, you know, choked up. So I was afraid I wouldn't be able to read it.
No, I know.
But there are some things that are so worth sharing. And then, ironically, they did quite a show on it last week on the Today Show after that video came up. And some of the responses of the people in my house, so when they watch that video, they're like, are they videoing that kid falling in the pool to prove a point? And I said, no. I said, that's the camera that they have set up there. And they must have visual cameras in their house wherever they are so they can keep an eye on the pool. I think that's great. And but I thought if the man that dove over the fence and cleared the concrete, which was like maybe 2 feet, 3 feet away from the rim of the pool, if he hadn't been able to like jump on the other side of the fence and dive into the pool, I mean, I had visions of me trying to do that and landing on the concrete. So it's also important who's around your house and what their, you know, what their capabilities are. So let's talk about that for a minute. What if your 2-year-old spends a day with grandma and grandpa and they have a big pool? Is that a safe situation? If grandma and grandpa are not in their 50s, but maybe, you know, they're very agile. They're in their, like me, maybe they're in their 70s. I couldn't have dove over that fence, Shell. I'm a great swimmer, but I couldn't have dove over that fence. And by the time I got around that gate, we'd have been in trouble.
Well, but I also think it has to do with the individual. You know, I don't want to make people feel like they can't trust family members and friends and stuff. If you have family members and friends that are very responsible, that are aware of these type of things, you could have this conversation with them and they get it. And they're like, yes, I totally understand. I'm going to be very careful. I'll make sure that the back door is locked. They can't even get to the pool. I'll know where they are at all times or something, you know. But if you have a conversation with somebody and they're like, don't worry about that kind of stuff. I've got a fence, you know. You don't leave your kid with somebody like that. So you have to. So first of all, I mean, I know parents that don't leave their kids with anybody until they're to a certain age because they just don't trust anybody but themselves. You know, sometimes they have a hard time even leaving their children with their spouse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is you have to judge people by who they are with their own lives. Like you said, there are grandparents that are very feeble that would not be alert enough. So maybe they could babysit, but if they have a pool, they may not have the wherewithal to make sure the children are safe. Then you have other grandparents, regardless of their age, that are very sharp, that are very aware, that are very in tune and take things like this seriously. Also friends, mm-hmm. close friends. There are friends that are very cavalier and they're like, don't worry about it. You know, they've raised 8 kids and, you know, they're, but for the grace of God, their kids never got hurt because they probably never watched one of them,
mm-hmm.
you know. So the people that you're going to consider leaving your children with, look how they treat their own children. Look what kind of responsibility they take in their own life. and make sure that it's somebody that has your set of values, that takes things like this seriously, you know, and then make a decision as to whether or not it's even a safe situation, you know. And I would look into, there are fences that supposedly are supposed to be impassable. I don't know if that's true, because I think children are very, very ingenious. But there are certain types of fence protectors. Like if you already have a fence around your pool, there's ways of reinforcing them so the child couldn't find a way in or something like that. And you may want to have one of these new, I forgot what the name of it is, but you can call these pool fence companies to come out and basically evaluate your fence to see whether or not it is the type that a child could figure out a way to get past, you know, or if there's a way of securing it differently. So that's another thing that somebody could look into.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like the best thing you can do for yourself is, by the time your child is a year old, you're taking that kid in the water with some kind of life preserver on.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of the little
mm-hmm.
plastic inner tubes that they can slip out of. Not one of the, you know, not a raft that you have to stand beside while they're laying on the raft. I take the nine-month-old and the three-year-old that my granddaughter is babysitting, and they go in the pool with me. And I make sure that they know how to go underwater. That's the first thing I do. I make sure that they, you know, have some kind of the wings I love. And now they've got the wings that have got the jacket that goes under their arms, around their little chest, and then has the wings on their arm, you know, on their forearm or on their the upper part of their arm as well. Those appear to be the real deal. I think that because the chest part keeps their head from going under. If you take them in and just wings, and they think they're safe because they've been with you with just the wings, their head can still get too heavy. And all it needs is to go down one time face first and suck up the water.
Right.
And you've got a problem.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, so shop wisely. The ones that go around their chest and then their arms too are awesome. I've also seen the ones that tie underneath them, like, you know, like under their bathing suit. There's a piece that goes up through there. Those are kind of nice, but they're real cumbersome. And for a little guy or a little girl, they're not very comfortable. And what ends up happening is the minute the kid gets out of the pool, they take it off. And then, you know, you look over and there they are again, right by the pool without any preserver on. So all of these things are important. But let's talk a little bit about how we feel about after somebody, I don't even know how to say this out loud. If a person, let's get out of the arena of kids because it's easier to talk about. Let's say it's an adult that
mm-hmm.
is underwater for so long and you resuscitate them. Do we have you read anything? Do you know anything about what we can do today once oxygen has been starved from the brain for that length of time? Have you ever read anything in all of your studies about, you know, them being able to, you know, I don't know, jumpstart the brain again? Do you know anything about that?
Well, the only thing that I've seen on a lot of these emergency shows I watch, well, first of all, you have to call 911 and get the paramedics there because they have equipment that can do different things. They can inject certain, like electrolytes and, I mean, I don't know if it's electrolytes, but they inject things into the person's body that help the organs to resuscitate and things like that. They have electrical equipment. They can shock the heart with electricity that sometimes will kickstart the electrical muscle of the heart, things like that. But in the meantime, until the emergency vehicles would show up there with the equipment and the things that they have that can help a body resuscitate, it's imperative to keep oxygen moving around the body, and you have to do it manually. So CPR is the best way to do that. And if you don't understand how to do CPR, basically what you're doing is, you know, doing bad CPR is better than doing no CPR. But basically what you're trying to do is make sure that you've turned the person on their side and allowed any water to come out of their lungs. Try to make sure that any water in the lungs can come out of the body, because they will drown just because the water is still in their lungs. So try to do that. You know, you want to try to lean the body over something so that the head is lower than the lung area. It'll kind of just allow the water to drain out that way, okay? Once you're sure that you've gotten out as much water as you can, then just start doing chest compressions, and then do like chest compressions to the count of 30, and then breathe into their mouth while pinching their nose, because that forces the oxygen. Breathe as deeply as you can out into their mouth, down into their lungs, so that you can actually see their chest rise up and down. Do that 2 or 3 times, and then chest compressions again. And this is very, very stressful, by the way. Sometimes people, after doing CPR, I've heard of people doing CPR, and then as soon as the paramedics get there, the person has a heart attack, because number one, they're very distraught, and it's physically difficult to do, you know. So if you're not in good health, try to talk somebody around you who is, or just do whatever you can to try to keep yourself as calm as possible. It's a very, very stressful situation. So the calmer you can keep yourself, just keep focused on the task at hand. Don't go to, oh my God, this person's going to be dead if I don't do this right. Just say, okay, I'm doing the best I can until real help gets here, and don't put any pressure on yourself. And these are some of the techniques that I've heard first responders use. These are some of the techniques I've heard other family members talk about, that they just went into a zone. They were trying not to allow themselves to panic, because once you panic, then it's very difficult to do CPR. You lose your own breath. So how are you going to give your breath to somebody else? So that's some of the advice. It might even be worthwhile if you think that this is something you would like to do. It's not a big deal to take a CPS course. There's even a lot of like Red Crosses and places like that that give free CPS courses, where it's like a one night. You know, you're not trying to become a paramedic. You just want to have this capability. I actually took CPR twice. The last time I think I did was like a decade ago. But the company I was working at was offering free CPR classes, because they just wanted a lot of the staff members to have that, you know. And it had nothing to do with our line of work. It was just something they offered. And when I was working at Disney, they offered it too. It's just a good skill to have, because you never know when you might see a car accident on the side of the road, or be at the beach, or have it be a family member that all of a sudden is in need of that type of help. But that's what it is. Chest compressions for like 30 seconds, then 2 to 3 deep breaths so that you can actually see their chest move, and then chest compression. Because what that does is it keeps oxygen. You're basically pumping the blood into the brain yourself. You're doing it manually instead of the heart doing it themselves. And when you're doing the chest compressions, you're trying to do it near where the heart is.
Yeah. Actually, you can be certified for CPR right online. It's like, I don't know, $12, something like that, and you can get your certification. But I want to say that I was certified 3 different times at Hippocrates in 10 years, because we'd renew our certification. And I only had to use it once, and that was to help our on-staff doctor. And they actually aren't having you breathe into people's mouths anymore. When I first got certified, they gave us a mouthpiece that I carried on my keychain.
Right. Yeah,
so
me
that
too.
You could do that with people. And then they decided that the breaths weren't as imperative as the pumping of the heart. And I don't know whether that's still true, but that had been that had been discussed on the last certification that I got. And then Dr. Joe told me they don't like you to do that anymore because for many, many different reasons. But one of the things that I think stays with me.
I think one of the main reasons might be that there's so many contagious diseases now, and they're afraid of somebody being a good Samaritan and either giving this person they're trying to save something or getting it. I still think the breath is a good idea because I've just heard of so many people being saved that way. Maybe if it's a family member, somebody you know, it might be safe to do that, but maybe it's a perfect stranger, then you just do the chest compression. So maybe that's a better way of looking at it.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what we had discussed at Hippocrates, and that's what we started doing. And, of course, one of the favorite things that I like to share with everybody, if you haven't already heard it, is the fact that when you are doing the pumps, if you do it in time to the Bee Gees song, Staying Alive, you get the pumps right. Dun, 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 staying alive. Did you know that?
No, that's awesome. I love that.
Yes. So if I don't know any of us that's over the age of 25. All my kids love the Bee Gees, all my grandchildren, even the great-grandchildren, and we all listen to the Bee Gees. So that song, if you can bring that up in your head, that is a good count to do the compressions on somebody's chest. The
awesome.
Other thing that is a little bit more sensitive, if you're doing an elderly person, you have to be careful. My suggestion is if you're in a place where there's lots of little kids and nobody at your house knows how to do CPR, somebody needs to. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking to myself right now, I'm going to have some of the younger kids go online and get certified, probably Joshua and Austin, because they're both good like that. But the more I think about it, the more wise I think it is to have somebody, somebody younger than me, of course, do that and be certified with that. But let's stay with the preventative part of this, is more important. To not get to that part where you have to save somebody's life, I mean, if you do, I hope you can. But let's stay with being prepared, precautionary, pay attention. I think that a swimming pool is an awesome thing. We also have a trampoline here. And every now and then I'll look out there and see like 10 kids on the trampoline at the same time. Kids will do anything that they can do without any kind of restrictions. So if you have a lot of kids, 10 kids on a trampoline, especially when the youngest one is like 4, it's not a good idea. So you have to have some common sense as well, you know. I also think that the pool needs to be respected. And one of the other things that I stopped letting anybody do, and this was hard because this was the grown-ups throwing people in the pool or pushing people in the pool. I don't allow that in our pool either because somebody will get hurt 9 times out of 10. But with the story that I shared about Pond and the story of me meeting that family, I always thought that was for a reason. I do that a lot. If something comes to me that I never thought about, it's a good thing. I remember very in my 30s meeting a woman who I thought was footloose and fancy free. Because I worked the 3 to 11 shift in a restaurant, and she would come in every other weekend, her and her girlfriend, and they were in their 50s, and they were on their way to the Bahamas to gamble. And I thought, here's a lady that's got life right by the whatever and lives her life exactly the way she wants to. And I just loved her, you know, and she was always happy, always in a good place. And if they won big the weekend before, the next weekend when they came in, I'd get a $5 tip. I just loved her. One day she doesn't come in. And I said to her friend, I said, what's up with Elsie? And she says, oh, her daughter, you know, and I said, I didn't even know she had a daughter. She says her daughter has been comatose for 30 years, and she cares for her. I said, what? And she said,
wow.
Yeah. She says she hasn't spoken or moved. She's on an IV. She's on a heart monitor in her living room, and that's where Elsie lives, except for every 2 weeks we go to the Bahamas and play for a little while, and she's got somebody that she really trusts, the nurse, that she will let stay with her daughter. Shelley, yes. I never forgot that. That was a long
yep.
time ago.
Mm-hmm.
A long time ago. And I have never forgotten. And I remember the next time I saw her, I didn't know what to say because she didn't tell me. Her friend told me.
Right.
So I had to, like, I felt like I was supposed to, like, hug her or something. And
oh.
I thought then I would be making her feel, you know, I really, and I never talked to her about it because the friend shared it with me. So on that note, I want to say to people, you know, this, if you know somebody that's going through something like that and you're feeling sorry for yourself, it's kind of a wake-up call, right? Kind of a wake-up call.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
Drowning can, I don't even know how this daughter ended up like that. But, I mean, we've read stories about the famous people. I can't think of the names right now. Remember the one that was kept alive for so many years and the parents wanted her kept alive and the husband wanted her to be, she took some kind of drug or something and put herself, Karen or something like that. Do you remember that story years ago?
Oh, yeah. I know. Yep. I know the story you're talking about. She was kept alive for over a decade, if I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, and the parents
it was one of the first cases that, I mean, it was just constantly in the news. It was one of the first cases of that happening.
Yes. That's the one. And she, you know, they went to court and everything, the family and the husband and all that kind of stuff. It was horrible. But again, you know, stuff happens. And
right.
I think it's good to be aware of that kind of stuff. I don't think you should dwell on it. I don't think it should become your way of life, always worried that something bad is going to happen. But I do think you do need to be aware. And pool safety mm-hmm. and water safety is right up there in the top three. I say when you live in Florida, there's water everywhere. But in truth, I guess if you're the kind of family that goes to swimming pools or takes beach vacations or something like that, water is there for all of us. So I do think you need to be careful, and I do think you need to be aware. And I think one of the most amazing things you can do is what Shelley's niece is doing, and that's make sure your kids know how to swim. As soon as you can get them swimming, the more you can
yep.
relax a little bit. But that doesn't mean you don't have to watch them anymore if they're only three and can swim. But it does mean that the safety issue is, you know, whittled down a little bit.
Right. And what's so great about that is that her older daughter is now a lifeguard.
Yeah.
That's what I was
a teenager.
Yeah.
Yep.
She sent us pics
mm-hmm.
of her the other day in her lifeguard uniform. I mean, she looks tough. She looks like somebody from Baywatch. It was so funny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she says this,
mm-hmm.
and I says, who is this kid? Who is this adult who's in my little niece's body? What happened here? You know,
yeah.
because she looks like
yeah.
she's 20 and she's not. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
terrifying. But anyway, but I was so impressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here she is. She's a lifeguard. So I think that she had gone through lessons when she was teeny like the other guys, you know, because there's a little bit of an age difference between her and her two younger siblings. But yeah, so so to her, and she loves swimming and all that, and it was just, you know, she works full time now, and one of her jobs is as a lifeguard. I love it.
Well, I think that's great for us. That's what I did with my mom. We did it for the local school. We taught swimming lessons, and we were lifeguards at the municipal pool here in Miami, actually, in South Florida when I was a kid. And sometimes you get some little tiny guy or girl that was scared to death of the water, and they'd be shaking all over. And just having them put their face in the water and seeing that they could do it, I'd say, don't breathe. just put your face in the water, and they'd get so they could do that. And after that, it was usually easy to teach them how to swim and get them comfortable in the water. So imperative. So we have an opportunity to have Hiawatha on the show. I'm thinking about asking if she wants to talk about her lifestyle and the properties of fasting. So I will let you know, but hopefully she will join us maybe one day this week. I don't know if I'll see if she can come on Wednesday or on Friday, but she's very knowledgeable, and she knows a lot of stuff about staying healthy. So God bless everybody. Have a great day. Thanks, Shell. Be back on Wednesday. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Awesome. Great show. Love you, and God bless everyone.